Welcome to the Mr. Nathan Powell podcast. This is Nathan Powell. Since Valentine just passed, I thought it would be fitting to talk about black love, which is my specialty, being a person who recently got married to another black partner. And I thought it would be great to celebrate that and also to talk about the topic and whether black love is still relevant. So my special guest today is my wife, Natalie, and we'll be discussing multiple topics about love, about marriage, about blending families and parenting. So it should be interesting to hear our perspective as a new married couple. If there are any other people who share these experiences, feel free to leave comments in the comment section. So Natalie.
Hi.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
So we're just going to start right from the top. What is black love? How do you see it? Like, how do you define black love in your opinion?
Okay, so black love to me, in my opinion, is just you have two black people coming together and sharing the same kind of communities, sharing the same love, sharing the same, pretty much just sharing love together, coming from the same background.
You raise a good point there. I think there's many types of love. Love between parent and child. You can have love between friends. You have love between family. But black love is, I feel like it's been kind of politicized, like it's a negative thing or political thing. But I think what black love does, it brings a little positivity between the black experience of how we love each other, because culture matters and experience matters. And I feel when you have two black people who truly love each other, there's not just a physical attraction, but also a spiritual attraction. And I think that comes from our history. Now, is black love the same for everybody? That's not true, because you have different types of black people from all around the world who celebrate their culture differently. And from experience, me being someone of Jamaican heritage, black love between a Jamaican and maybe someone who's Nigerian or Kenyan, that may be different, right? So spiritually, I feel like the fact that both of us come from a Jamaican background and our experiences are similar, I think that also adds to our experience, because when you're making a plan with the person that you love and you're saying that you want to build a legacy with them, you need to be able to share a vision, and it becomes much easier to share a vision with someone who understands your experience instead of saying, oh, you know what, I don't really see it that way, or, you know, that's not real, or kind of just brushes off your experiences. So black love is about a shared experience, not just physically, but also spiritually.
Right. No, I do agree with you. It's coming, you know, from a perspective where when you can share the same values, share the same experiences, it makes it easier for both of you guys to be in that relationship. So I definitely agree with all that you've said. And it just makes like your love towards each other even better. Right? You can experience a lot of things together, and you can share your past experiences, and you can go through different experiences together.
And love changes over time.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know, but originally me and you, we both had a relationship in our early days. What is it?
Teens.
Over 20 years ago.
Late teens, like yeah.
So at that time, the definition of love was different. I don't think we thought about all those things in high school. It was just like, I like you, you like me. There was no importance necessarily to people's backgrounds or cultures. It's just about attraction and, you know, I like the person. I feel like as you go along, depending on what you're looking for in a relationship, some people require something much more deeper than just physical attraction or convenience. Let's talk about how we met, just to break ice for people. Do you remember how we met?
I remember.
You have a pretty sharp memory.
I do have a pretty sharp memory, yes. But I think you would have like a much better.
From the guy's perspective, I do remember seeing you at a party. It was a party of a mutual friend named Ashley. Ashley, if you're out there, big shouts to you for inviting me to this birthday party where I met my future wife at that time, I should say. Yeah, so I saw you and you were pretty quiet that time. I don't think they thought that you would talk to me at the time when I was trying to get some background information. But in the end, I had the guts to go up to you, which is, I don't know if that still goes on in this day and age. Do guys just walk up to women and shoot their shot anymore? I think things are getting much more different and more complicated in how you approach people nowadays. Who knows? People might turn the phone on you and start to embarrass you publicly if you say the wrong thing nowadays. But back then, if you embarrassed yourself, hopefully you and the other person were the only person who knew about that. So I came up to you with the assistance of another friend of mine, Moya. Shout out to Moya too. And, you know, the rest is history. I end up giving you my phone number. We dated.
Yeah, right? I remember.
Now, we're talking about connections. And at that time, we had different families. You came from a very strict religious family.
Yes.
You weren't even allowed to wear pants. Imagine that. Not wearing pants. So she would always wear these long skirts all the time. Now, I grew up in a Christian household, went to a Christian private school and all of that. However, I was just more, I guess, free-spirited at that time. So there was a little bit of complications in that, because at that point, when you're in young love and you're living under your parents' roof, the rules are your parents' rules. Right. You decide what you want based on what your parents will be happy with. So I feel our relationship did suffer at that time because we didn't have the strength at that time to make our own decisions. We didn't have control of our own lives. But right. As we get older now, we can make decisions for ourselves. Our parents' satisfaction is not such a big, big burden, because you're not afraid, oh, your parents are going to kick you out if you don't like this or that. So to anyone out there who's young and they're in love, yeah, you know, the parents are a big factor, but you need to be brave and start your own life and venture out together. Parents are not always right. So we did separate and we had our own lives. I had a daughter and you had a boy and a girl.
Yeah, a couple years down the road. But yeah, I just want to say shout out to Ashley for inviting me to that party also.
All right.
Yeah.
And you got married, right?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't get married yet, right? And then we reunited, started talking just as friends. And then the opportunity presented itself. You went through a tough time because you also went through a divorce, right? So firstly, in your perspective, when it comes to Black love, sometimes you may be in a relationship and Black love presents itself, or you decide that you find a better option for yourself. In religions, some religions do not believe in divorce, and I would assume you come from one of those religions, right?
I did, absolutely.
So what is it like to love someone and be married to another person with the feeling that it would be wrong to get divorced? What's that like?
Okay, so that's a good question. I feel like for me and my own personal perspective and opinion, and from my experience, it felt a little bit different talking to you because I've already dated you. And we came from a relationship where even though we were young, we never had any issues. So even though there was a breakup for a number of years, coming back to speak with you and being back in a relationship with you, it felt easier and we're like more mature now. So it was a little bit more easier for me. If it was like someone brand new, fresh, I think it would be more complicated. But you seem like the same person that I met back when we were, you know, in our late teens. And, you know, you're the caring person. I was able to talk to you. You're able to talk to me. And it was just easier. Yeah, it was just easier.
We had the good communication going on.
Yes, and that is a really good thing in a relationship.
And there was a bit of a pushback from your family when it came to me also. You know, me being a former Christian, I no longer am a Christian. However, I still believe in God. There's no change in my behavior or the way I act. In fact, I do take a lot more accountability for myself, especially with the fact that, you know, I have a child and now I have stepchildren. I have people who look towards me as an influence. So my character has always been a strong point of mine. But we did have pushback because in certain religions, even if you're a part of a different denomination, it can be complicated, right? And for me, I've grown up with friends from different faiths. I have one best friend that's Seventh Day, another best friend who's Catholic. So to me, I can't see any fault. In my mind, I feel like you should believe in whatever makes you a better person. There's no point in believing something and you feel you're right, but yet it only brings out the ugliness in you, right? So you had some pushback. How does it feel talking about that? Again, Black love, you found someone that you loved, that you want to pursue, but you have some pushback because of the, I guess, religious differences. And I'm sure this is very common for a lot of people. You know, it does exist where people of different faiths come together.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about that? How did you handle that situation?
Well, I know for sure it was hard. It was not something that I decided to do overnight. Coming from a spiritual, religious background, I did a lot of prayer about it, talking to God about it. And it wasn't easy for me to make this decision. A lot of people, I think, a lot of denominations, they think if you don't go to this specific church or that specific church, you can't be with that person. But I had to really come to a conclusion that I got between myself and God that that doesn't really matter. Yeah, I had to do that. And then overall, just your character, that also helped me. And you do take a lot of accountability. You were, like I said earlier, were someone easy to talk to. That's what made it a little bit easier for me to actually be in this relationship with you. But it wasn't a very easy situation for me. It was very hard. And I believe now I overcame it.
Yeah, I find as a former Christian, I think the mentality is if you are no longer a Christian, then I guess you're a backslider. Now you want to indulge in all the negative things in life. You want to start drinking and smoking. And it's never anything, anyone who decides not to be a Christian is never for a good reason. It's always for something negative. It's never for a personal choice. And I feel like at the end of the day, it's just a title. I think your values, your lifestyle, how you live, you know, I definitely believe in God. I believe God is good. If there's anything that I've learned and the most important thing that I could take from the scripture or from other people's religions, I feel like the most important thing is a simple principle of treating others the way you would like to be treated. So if I can get that principle right, just that one thing right, I feel like the world would be a better place for all of us if we all just did that one thing, just treat others how we like to be treated. So that's one of the principles that I just try to focus on. And I also try not to focus so much on trying to fix things for everybody. The world's not a perfect place. I like to try my best to fix myself. And if people want to hear my opinions, I do have my own opinions. At the end of the day, I'm not trying to win an argument. They think I'm trying to convince them, but it's not that strong. It's just you never heard these opinions from people. A lot of people are very confused about what they want in life, who they are, and I just don't share that same confusion. It could be from my own personal experiences, but at the end of the day, I definitely know who I am and my purpose as a father, as a husband, and as a Black man. I'm not confused at all. So to lighten up the room, let's talk about nostalgia. They say that, you know, when you're with a woman and you have this romance from back in the day, that it's just nostalgic. Men can get caught up. We go back to there. We put a high value on a previous relationship, even if it's not that, I guess, that great, right? Just out of nostalgia. Do you believe in the nostalgia effect? Almost like a honeymoon kind of vibe.
I do. I do actually believe in it.
Is that a positive or a negative? I think it can be both, actually, but what's your perspective?
I think it could be both. I think it could be both because you're reuniting with the person that you met in the past. And yeah, I think it could be both.
Yeah, I think when it becomes negative is when you find someone from the past, but you expect them to be that person from the past. You have to accept that things have changed, that they've evolved. The question is, do they still have the core characteristics that you're looking for? So let's get into that. Like, what characteristics do you look for in a partner? We'll start with you.
Okay, so yeah, I think it can be like bittersweet, both negative or positive. But for me, what I was looking for, someone who I could communicate with, and you matched that. I wanted someone who I was able to open up to, and you matched that. There are a few things that from the past that I noticed with you. You were caring, easy to talk to, and those two things, I feel like you still had them.
What about physical traits?
Physical traits?
What are you looking for in a man? You don't have to feel pressure because I'm around you right now. You don't have to embellish.
That's important too. You know, seeing you back then when we were young teens,
Say what you feel. Don't hold your
tongue. Seeing you back then, you know, I was very nervous back then because a lot of people may not know, but you were my first boyfriend. You were actually my first ever boyfriend in my whole entire life. And
first kiss?
And yeah, I'm blasting that too.
Telling all your business today.
Yeah, first, basically almost everything. So the physical attraction was definitely there then and it is now.
Okay. And what about mentally? What do you look for in a man mentally?
Mentally, a man that has emotional intelligence, someone that, you know, can share some of the same values with you, someone who can give you comfort in time of need of comfort, and just being honest, but not only with me, but with himself.
Okay. So for me, physically, spiritually, and mentally, physically, I look for someone who is in decent shape, right? It's not really a requirement, but I do give respect to people who keep themselves in good shape. And the reason why I say that is because it is a lot of commitment to keep in shape, even for me myself. When I was in my teens, I had a six pack, so it was so easy to have it. Now, as I've gotten older, I got to really work for that six pack, right? So keeping in shape is a sign of dedication. So when I see a woman who takes that time to eat right and go to a gym and keep up with themselves, that self-love, that is important to me. And I respect that. And it also forces me to also be conscious of my own health. I feel like it's good to have people to have a partner with good habits so that you share good habits instead of my bad habits rubbing it off to the other person. Spiritually, I feel it's not so much about what religion, but what religion does for you. So you can believe in whatever you want to believe in, as long as that makes you a better person. I should be seeing that you're practicing, whatever you're practicing, whatever beliefs you have, is somehow improving you to become a better person. And my core belief is God is good, so we should all represent good and try to be the best version of ourselves and to do good for ourselves and do good for others. It's pretty straightforward. You want to be constructive, not destructive in life. And mentally, I definitely need someone who is smart. I need someone who knows how to be empathetic and nurturing. I feel like that's a strength for women. Men do have that, but me, I also work on my side of empathy because I flip back from being strong and hardened, where you have to be almost like a soldier and do what a man has to do, to being also nurturing, which is a balance, especially when you have a daughter. My daughter is getting older now. She's in her teenage years. She'll be turning 15 this year. So it's been a journey just growing a daughter. And from a man's perspective, I can't teach her how to be a woman, but you definitely want to treat your daughter a certain type of way so you don't normalize certain types of behavior. And I also want a woman who is considerate, thinks about other people than just himself. Considerate is a big thing. And honest. Lying to me is not just telling someone something that's not true. It's also making me believe something that's not true. And there's a lot of people who won't lie to you directly, will lie to you indirectly. It's all the same. If you make me believe something that is not true, then that's not good character. So those are a few of the things that I like about women, or I look for in a woman. What about deal breakers? Can you share some of your, like, if you see this, then it's a no-go. Things that you consider turnoffs when it comes to a partner.
Again, another good question. I feel like deal breakers vary. But for me, a deal breaker would be like a lack of communication, lack of trust, being disrespectful to your partner, and not making a lot of effort to do things that you and your partner, like if your partner wants you to do something for them with them, you know, not showing that effort is a deal breaker. And, you know, maybe being over possessive or controlling, that's a deal breaker for me as well. Just showing lack of interest and maybe emotional or physical or verbal abuse, that's like a deal breaker for me.
For me, some deal breakers would be dishonesty. That's a huge one. I just can't be with someone who's dishonest. Trust is the foundation of everything. As men, we're building constantly. And there's a lot of risk with getting married or even being in relationships. Being in a relationship for a guy, and I can also speak as a black man, can cause a lot of problems for us. We work so hard. We already have a lot of things that are against us that are, I guess, depicting negative stereotypes about black men when we're trying to enter the professional sphere, right? And as a person who's worked in many different organizations and different corporations, your reputation matters. You need to always, always get everything right. There's no room for mistakes as a black man. You can imagine the nightmare it is, even if you have a small criminal record as a black man trying to find a decent job. You're pretty much cut out of the office sphere. You probably have to go into trades or something else, right? So, you know, there's a lot of barriers, and relationships are part of that add to the instability of all of that. So I feel like if you're a dishonest person, that could lead to accusations, that could damage your reputation, that could lead to a lot of harassment, right? Anyone who's ever had an angry ex who comes around and just causes problems for you. So I definitely feel that honesty is important. I also pay attention to how people treat their past partners too. That's a red flag for me. If you're the type of person that's always constantly talking negative about the people you've been with, especially if you've been with them a long time, it kind of is a red flag to me because I'm thinking to myself, well, why did you stay there so long? I don't believe that someone will stay that long with someone unless they were complicit in that. So you can admit to making a mistake, but when you talk negative and down someone, that means you're not taking accountability for your mistake with either staying there or being complicit in that kind of behavior. Another thing that's a red flag for me are people who lead with their sexuality more than their personality. And the reason why I feel like it's a sign of insecurity, right? You're always trying to distract from the real person. So you're trying to push your physical aspects too much. You're just trying to distract. Oh, look over here. Look at my body. There has to be some kind of conversation piece where you can speak and connect to me on a mental level. A lot of people feel uncomfortable with having a male partner who is intelligent. Mm-hmm. Some guys are very intelligent. However, they don't want to speak because they're afraid to be wrong or ridiculed or be called stupid. And, you know, I find that being smart and being a good communicator doesn't always come hand in hand. It should come hand in hand. But for a lot of guys, they're smart people. They just don't know how to communicate it. And when you have maybe more traditional, like, you know, black women have more traditional routes where they've, you know, they're pretty good at in the workplace. So their communication, it sounds good. But sometimes I tell you, just because it sounds good doesn't mean it's right. So you have this balance between people who may not communicate as well, who may be smarter, and people who think they're smart, but they don't, you know, because they're communicating very well, but it's nonsense. Certain men who are smart, know what they're talking about, communicate to people who think they know it all, right? So, you know, I think that's what black love is about. Black love is about having the patience and time to communicate with each other and respect each other's opinions. A degree, a PhD, all those things don't necessarily mean you're always right. There's so many things that are in the world to learn. And if you believe just because you have one degree, you know everything, that is the height of ignorance. So respect is another thing that's a deal breaker. If you do not have respect for me, then I have to walk. I don't think any man could be in a relationship where he's not respected for very long. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
With all the deal breakers and all the things we just mentioned, the next question that I have is, how do you know when to walk away? When do you know it's time to call it quits and leave a relationship?
I guess based on some of your deal breakers that you've initially had, if you feel like the person that you are in a relationship with, they're lacking a number of times what you were looking for initially. You said one of your biggest one is lying or not being respectful. I feel like if that's happening a number of times, you know, sometimes you gotta maybe walk away. And it's not only cheating. Like, cheating is like the number one thing I notice for a lot of our relationship breakups. But I don't think cheating is the only thing. But that could be like a main factor as well.
I think there's a hashtag that goes, black men don't cheat, right?
Right. So, yeah, you know, just maybe not giving you the respect that you need and just lack of a lot of stuff that you were looking for initially.
Let's talk about cheating, which is, I guess, a huge, huge problem, not just for black love, but for any love. I feel like men have this, I guess, stigma that it's just men cheating. I don't believe that to be true, that, you know, it's just men cheating. I do believe that women cheat just as much, just maybe they don't get caught as much, right? They have different ways, they have a lot more access. And I feel there's also a lot of guys who are willing to keep quiet about the cheating versus I feel women who cheat with men, they sometimes will be more verbal about it because the goal for them is to get the relationship, is to, I guess, take your partner and keep that resource for themselves. So it's more likely, I feel, for a woman to show themselves and say, hey, I'm with your man, to try and break the relationship up out of maybe jealousy or because they have a desire to have that relationship for themselves, than a man who most likely, not saying not all of them will want a relationship, but some of them are just doing their physical impulse action. So they don't care how many relationships they're with another person or how many wives they're with or how much times they cheat. It's not a concern because they're getting what they want, just the physical aspect. My problem with cheating is a personal problem because, and I'm not saying that I've never cheated in the past, but I feel like as men, You need to leave your childish ways behind. You need to move on and actually be a man. Part of being a man is discipline. It's the height of weakness if every time a woman shows her body or tries to tantalize you that you're just going to fold and give in. And I don't think a woman respects a man that's too easy to fold and give themselves in. It bothers me to do that. The same reason why I don't smoke weed. As a child, when you're younger, you do it for recreation, thinking it's a cool thing. But then as you get older, again, when you're doing these other things, whether people agree whether it's good or bad, I think we can all agree that people do it as a crutch in order to make it easier for them to get through something else. And sometimes it may be valid. I'm not judging. People take it for pain and different things. And maybe, again, it may be better for them than certain things that make them have more of a reaction, like some of the prescription drugs. But regardless of whether it's prescription drugs or weed, eventually it becomes something that you're dependent on. And, you know, that's why they have a specific dosage that you have to take. If you have too much of something, you just become dependent on it. And I don't want to be dependent on something. I don't want it to be weak. I don't want every woman I see that I just fold. I want to be a strong man. I want to be able to know that I'm not going to be easily manipulated. I feel like that is what a true partner is. A true strong partner is, or a true black man is, someone who's not easily fooled.
I agree.
Do women cheat? Do you believe women cheat, or is it just the men all the time?
I believe everybody cheats, not just men, but I think the majority is men.
Have you cheated before?
Nope.
Okay, so at least you have that.
Yeah, and also I feel like, you know, someone who cheats, it could be a numb for a number of reasons. Like, I feel like it could be maybe low self-esteem, a lack of emotional connection. They're lacking something. I feel like it's not just because they want to cheat, but it's about also fixing themselves and having control.
So I can't speak on what it takes to never be a cheater at all. So that's I'm sure a lot of people are curious, like, how do you achieve that? How do you continue with all the temptations and all the options out there? And, you know, I guess the question also is, have you been cheated on?
Yeah.
Okay. So a non-cheater that's been cheated on, how do you not cheat? How do you not do tit for tat? Like, if someone's cheating on you, the first impulse for a lot of people, oh, you cheat on me, I'm going to cheat on you and make you feel it back. Especially, I feel, you know, for a lot of women, that might be a normal impulse. Maybe I'm being a bit sexist. I don't want to say that all women are like that. Men do that too, right? You know, but I feel like men are get more angry if they find out their partners are cheating. Mm-hmm. Whereas women, I think they want to teach you what it feels like to be in that position. So right. It's more of an emotional aspect than just an anger aspect.
Right.
How do you, as a loyal person who's never cheated, manage not to cheat? What do you say to yourself when you're being cheated on and you're being loyal? How does that work?
Like what you said, like you feel that impulse, like, oh yeah, you did it to me, I'm going to do it back to you. For me, I feel like you're not really doing it back to the person. You have to think about yourself first, because it's not going to really hurt the other person. You're just going to end up hurting your own self in the end. So I feel like just having that mindset and that thought that, oh yeah, I'm going to cheat on you because you cheated on me. It's not, you're not doing yourself any better or any good in even thinking that or even doing the physical act of that. Because at the end of it, you're going to be the one who suffers. So as being a loyal person, I just feel like I have to think about myself first in that situation. And I'm not really thinking, oh, I'm going to hurt the other person, because I won't be hurting them. I'm hurting myself.
That's true. Cheating does hurt yourself. For me, I never run from a problem. And I think the toughest thing to do is to admit to your partner that you've cheated. I've had to do that multiple times, and it's not an easy process. And honesty can work. If you are trying to repair your relationship, being honest can help. Like, you can recover from cheating on your partner, being honest about it. But I think the main difference between the childish me back when in my teens or early youth, the difference between then and now is that my word matters even more now. To me, it's not just about the cheating, it's about the action after the mistake. So in the situations, I never went back after I said I was sorry for something. I never went back and continued the same situation. And I feel that a lot of people, they say they're sorry, but there's no change. And I think that's very important. If you are with someone, I feel like it's time to go. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even have to be cheating. It could be anything. If they say they're sorry about something, they acknowledge that something bothers you, and they keep on doing it over and over and over again, they refuse to change their ways, At that point, you have to admit to yourself that they're just not willing. You're not important enough to them to change these habits.
Right.
It's not going to get any better. If you wait 10, 15 years, it's just going to be worse and worse, because now it's going to be like, why are you bothering me about this? You've accepted this for 5, 10 years. Now you want to complain about it.
Right.
The more time that passes, the more you let go, the more it eats away, the more you resent the person. So it's better just to walk away from that situation entirely.
Exactly. Yep.
And of course, another deal breaker we should mention, I think we can both agree, is abuse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as a man, I can tell you, there's a lot of women who love to hit men, love to be physical. And it takes a lot of restraint sometimes to remember not to react and smack them back. Because what happens is when someone's hitting you, your natural instinct is to wave your arms or, you know, flick away, like defend, right? So you have to be careful, not in the reaction, not to accidentally hurt your partner. I have a hands-off policy. I do not, like, I think it's a sign of disrespect for you to put your hands on me. So that is definitely a deal breaker. What about you? How do you feel about people who may get physical with you?
That's definitely a deal breaker for me as well. I did mention on that earlier. I agree, like, you know, like your space and like your body, like no one else should be able to come and feel the need to touch you in any way aggressively. If that happens, I feel like that's, including cheating, should be like the number one deal breaker, because you have no right to be hitting someone else or, you know, abusing the other person.
When you go through all these different experiences, like being abused, people accusing you of abuse, though you might not have abused them, even accusations can be damaging. We call this baggage, because now you've had these traumatizing experiences with your past partner, and now you're trying to move on to the next person. People believe there's a period that should be there for healing. Do you believe in healing, a healing period, that concept?
Healing in terms of like going back to the person?
Healing as in like you've been in a bad relationship, now you're supposed to take time to heal before you move on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah, I believe in the healing process.
Is there a standard time period that you believe?
I think once you feel comfortable within yourself, I don't think there's necessarily like a period. Some people would wait for 3 months, 6 months, or a year. And I feel like the standard for a lot of people are just traditionally, people be like, yeah, just wait for a year or more before you get back into any kind of relationship. But I feel it comes from a more in-depth feeling within yourself, dealing with the process of healing before you decide to go and, you know, being in another relationship. For me, it took maybe a year. Some people might think it may be a short while, but I don't think there's a limited time of when you should be back in a relationship. As long as you know yourself and what healing process you've been through or what healing processes that you've taken to heal.
I've had a lot of conversations, I should say, with men who say, I don't trust women. They had bad experiences with their child's mother, or, you know, going to court, or even divorces where they take a bunch of money, and or even undermining. It seems like a lot of men are angry about their past situations, past relationships, past marriages, and now they're in new relationships and they want to punish their current partner by basically saying that they're never going to get married again, they're never going to do this again, never going to do that again. And it kind of makes me feel like, can you ever have a successful relationship with a new partner if all you're thinking about is all the failures from your past relationship? At what point do you say to yourself, it's time to let go of the baggage and move on? Another baggage I find, that's for men. For women, I find a common baggage. This is not really, I don't consider this a baggage, because I feel like that term is a little bit disrespectful because it's more of serious in nature. So I would say a barrier for this one is when women have been either raped or molested at some point from a relationship. And now growing up or moving forward, it really creates barriers for intimacy. So you don't like to do certain things, or you don't want to, you know, certain things remind you of other partners. So there is that aspect where a lot of intimacy barriers come up, where now you as a partner are with someone, you're trying to move forward, but they just can't because they're held by their own trauma. That's something that might be a little bit deeper. But how do you feel about even children, marrying someone with children? Some single people consider that baggage. If I was a person with no children, even though I made that decision to be with someone who had 4 kids in my early 20s, my daughter was the 5th child. But even though I made that decision, I don't know if I would recommend it to someone else, because it is a very difficult task. Now that I have my own child, I think it's good to be with someone who has another child instead of going and putting that pressure on someone who doesn't have a child. Let people with no kids be with people with no kids. Mm-hmm. And people with kids who have the knowledge and experience for that be with other people with kids. Let's not, as people with children, just go ahead and find all these single people who have no kids and just trying to force them to take that on. And then worst of all, some people are coming from marriages or past relationship. Now you don't want any kids and you don't want to get married. So now you're just really cutting off all the options for a single person who's optimistic and making them feel down about the whole excitement of being married. But when you were single and when you had no kids, you were excited to have a kid and excited to get married. I just don't believe that people with kids should bring their baggage to people without kids. How do you feel about that?
I feel like baggages into a relationship depends on the person you're getting into the relationship with. Like, I know with us, you know, I have two kids and you had one daughter. And before we decide to even be in a relationship, that was one of her discussions we had in order for us to even be married today. So, you know, bringing on some of, I guess you'd say baggage, that would be like a baggage, right? Bringing on kids into the other person's life, right? Yeah.
Baggage or barrier. We're just using the term baggage because that's the common term, but it does sound kind of funny.
Yeah.
Talking about kids with baggage, it's not really
it's not really right? The kids, yeah.
But just so everybody understands the term itself. But yeah, you know, it is difficult because the children are brought into this world not just by themselves. There's another partner attached to that person. So whenever you're a stepmom or stepdad, of course, there's going to be barriers when dealing with that because that's someone else's child, right?
Yeah. That's true. And maybe just other barriers or baggages. People come in from different walks of life. Like you said earlier, maybe what if someone was molested or what if someone, you know, had a traumatic event in their life? You know, that would be a barrier or a baggage, right? So you have to know how to deal with that person. Maybe they don't want to be intimate with you because of being molested when they're younger. Maybe they don't want to be honest with you because they had some trauma or whatever the situation may be. So I think in the beginning, before you even get into a relationship, you kind of have to dig a little to know more about the person to see if you want to deal with their barriers or their baggages.
Yeah. And even though we knew each other from the past, we did a lot of digging to the extreme. I had to know everything because really and truly, that's the time to ask questions. Don't ask questions after you're engaged. Don't ask questions after you're married. Doesn't mean you can't ask then at all, but I'm just saying before you even make those decisions to get engaged and get married, you need to be asking a lot of questions before you even consider even going that far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since we're talking about engagement now.
Okay.
I proposed to you.
You did?
Yep. In front of a big, big crowd. And the funny thing is, I just have to mention shouts to Kamikaze Juice, who helped me put together this amazing proposal in the 90s party. When I was coming up with the concept of doing it, he volunteered to help me out. And I think it was on the Sunday, we had been ring shopping. Just, you know, I encourage guys, just take your partner ring shopping even when you're not considering. So it's not so obvious when you're going to propose. Just keep going around and eventually you'll have a taste for what they like. And they won't know which one you're going to pick because you've been to so many stores. But anyways, we went ring shopping as we've done in the past. We left like we've normally done. But this time it was time to go into action. So I had called to get the ring the next day because I couldn't get it in front of you. And then the ring was supposed to be ready for me to pick up, but then it was gone.
Oh no.
And I had to I had to ask for help from the store, the person who was helping me, who by chance was actually a family friend, just randomly worked there. And we had to go order another one. So here we are. Here I am, sorry, with Kamikaze Juice trying to plan my proposal at his event. And I didn't even have a ring until the Friday. And I think the event was the Saturday. A lot was going on. But in the end, it all worked out.
I had no idea.
On my Instagram page, Mr. Nathan Powell, you'll see highlights of the proposal there. You even actually see some highlights from our wedding, which is nice. I guess my question is, I've seen social media. Some guys, they do the most. They got all types of things in place. Everybody's looking at them in that moment. And then the woman will say no. And I'm thinking, oh man, this is like etched in time. Not only is it bad for you to get a no, that's going to look bad for any woman you propose to after. Because they're going to see like, oh, this guy got rejected publicly by this woman. It doesn't increase your value with other women to get rejected in that kind of way. You know, it doesn't make it exciting. So As a woman who was proposed in a grand manner in front of a crowd, what goes through your mind at that moment when you're considering a yes or a no?
Well, I was just thinking about it. I was nervous. I was shocked. And a lot was going through my mind. But because I knew that we talked about it, I just didn't know that it was going to be that day. I felt it was easy for me to say yes.
Yeah, that's about talking about everything that we mentioned before. You need to ask these questions. You need to know what they want. Do they want marriage? Do they don't want marriage? You have to find out, because if you're with a woman who wants marriage and then you continue to date them, you're going to feel pressured because that's what they want. And sometimes people say they don't want marriage, but they really do. You have to also be willing to let someone go who doesn't want what you want, regardless of how convenient the relationship is.
Yeah.
We both discussed it. You had mentioned marriage. For me, I've never been married before, but I had nothing against getting married. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just another form of commitment. And since I had given my word already, even before we got married, when I decided that I was going to be with you, I already committed not to talk to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to ask me for that. I just decided to do that. Because at the end of the day, if I'm not willing to do that, then why am I with you?
Yeah, exactly. So it was an easy yes for me. Being on that stage, I was so nervous because I was not expecting for me to be engaged in that kind of a crowd or in that kind of atmosphere. But it was easy for me to say yes.
Shouts to Kamikaze Juice for making that possible. There were a lot of hiccups. Even the time of it, we had changed the time a bit.
Oh.
It was supposed to be earlier. And Juice is like, no, wait. There'll be more people. You know what I mean? Like, he was handling it. And in the end, all the planning, DJs and the photographer, we end up using those same people for our wedding. That is black love in the sense of a black community.
Exactly.
We need more moments like that, that we can actually look out for each other and show people. Because people are always telling me, oh, black people don't work together, this and that. And I'm saying to them, well, if everybody who said black people don't work together just work together, then the problem would be solved. Because it seems like everybody's saying the same thing, but we need to take action. And I know people like Kamikaze Juice, and even a shout out to Breezy too, because Breezy is a person who I was friends with first, because Kamikaze Juice is Breezy's little brother, if you know the backgrounder. But yeah, Breezy, shout outs to you too, because those are people who have been solid, people who have been looked out for me. Of course, I have other friends besides that that were looking out for me too during that time for the wedding. And shouts to Basil, of course.
Shout out.
That was a good moment.
It was.
Right?
Yep.
Where do we go now?
Yeah, we're married now.
For 1 year?
Yes.
Our 1 year anniversary was on Valentine's Day. Last Valentine's Day, it seemed very sunny and nice. This Valentine's Day, I think we had snowstorms out there. We were very lucky to have such great weather. I think it was meant to be. And then the next day it snowed. I remember that.
Yeah.
Some barriers for anyone who's looking to get married. It's not always going to go perfect. I think we had a venue. We decided to go within our community, support another black venue. These are things that happen. Just because they're black doesn't mean that's going to work out. So character matters. We had started with this hall and made deposit. And then what happened was construction just started randomly. They acted like they didn't know about it. And the management's like, yeah, we told them about it. There was piles of dirt taller than me. I'm like 5'11", right? I'm not super tall, but I'm tall enough. And the person pretty much had the attitude like, well, inside is fine. So, you know, we end up having to lose that money during that time and find a new venue. And then we took it to another venue, which is, you know, outside of community. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Black love. We need to have black love across businesses, too, not just in our interactions. But we have to show black love and support each other. If you're done wrong by a black business, don't keep on protecting them. Hold them accountable and let other black people know who the actual people are doing good business in our community. Don't let people who take advantage of us continue to take advantage of us just because they're from our community.
Right, right. I agree.
Yeah.
But overall, I think we had a really, really great wedding.
Yeah,
it was fun. And we had a lot of people showed up at our reception. And it was a really, really great event.
We talked about earlier about families pushing back. When you have to make a decision of who you love, and we're talking about black love also, right? You got to know what you want. So we did have some pushback. There were some family members who decided they didn't want to support, didn't want to come out. And, you know, some family members who thought, oh, coming out in the middle of the week because it was Valentine's Day. Oh, why did you have it on this day? And stuff like that. But in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, when that incident happened and our money got taken from us, stolen from us, right? Pretty much I consider it stolen because you didn't give us even 50% back of the deposit, right? So when our money got taken from us, if we had done it on a traditional day, we would not be able to book another venue because all the venues for our wedding were booked and this was last minute. So we had to change
our venue
for a reception. We had to change it last minute. And if had it not been on such an awkward day like Valentine's Day, I don't think we would have been able to pull it off. But if you see, again, my Instagram page, you see the wedding. It worked out well. It was a beautiful wedding. People had a blast. The beautiful thing is we had people come out. They came out and celebrated Valentine's with us. So everybody in the room was celebrating love. It was full of Black people, Black couples just loving each other.
Yeah.
There are other people who weren't Black there too. But it was very nice to see so many people from our community just having a good time and being happy in the middle of the week, too, on top of that, right?
It was good.
It was a good moment. I appreciate everybody who came, everybody who supported us from day one. And hopefully that moment was something to remember. So 1 year later, here we are, against all odds. Things are looking up for us.
Yes.
Blended family and everything.
Yeah, everything's looking good. We're happy and, you know, we're blessed.
Let's talk about marriage versus commitment. Which is more important, or you can't have one without the other? What's your opinion on that?
Marriage versus commitment. I feel like commitment is equal, or maybe not even equal, is more, because if you weren't committed before you got married, then it wouldn't make sense to get married. So, and marriage is just coming together based on the commitment that you guys had initially. So I feel like the commitment before and after, you know, is stronger.
Do vows still matter?
Yeah, I believe so.
In my mind, I feel like if you're married to someone but you're not committed to them, it's problematic. You know, you have to show commitment to someone. That's the loyalty piece of everything. If you're not committed to someone, and it doesn't mean committed to putting up with people's nonsense. When someone's committed to you, they're committed also to doing right by you. They're committed to making sure they do things that are in your best interest. It's not just about enduring. So there's a high emphasis on just getting married, getting the ring, and enduring all the hardships. But if someone's truly committed to you, then it doesn't have to be hard and complicated, because at the end of the day, you want the same thing. You want to have a peaceful marriage, a happy marriage.
Yeah, also showing accountability as well, because you can go back to whatever the vow was and say, hey, you remember you said this or you said that, you vowed this, right? So it shows a sense of accountability as well.
Who leads in a marriage? I know as a Christian, they talk about leading. Is it the man, is it women? Do you believe both? Like, what's your perspective on leading?
I think it's traditional. Men usually are the leaders in the Christian community, or just from a Christian background, biblically.
What's your definition of leading, though?
My definition of leading? I feel like leading from a man who leads knows what he wants and know the values of both partners. I feel like it also, when you're leading, I think it's leading towards your wife being submissive to you as well. But I don't think it's controlling. I feel like someone who knows what they want and has the same values, then it should be easier for you to follow whatever lead that your spouse or your partner is giving.
Submissive is very controversial. I think in this day and age, you know, we have feminists, we have people who believe like being submissive is such a horrible thing. I think that everybody agrees that compromise is important. Compromise is positive. Submitting to someone is a form of compromise. But I don't feel that submission is like, oh, I'm going to do anything you say. Submitting to someone is conceding that they agree and they're going to cooperate with your plan, right?
Right.
As a man in the marriage, you should always have a plan that considers everybody in your family, the children, and your wife. Your loyalty, number one, should be to your partner and to your wife. Your children cannot put food on the table or nurture or do all these things that you need to be done as a partner. You can't prioritize them, because at the end of the day, you as a unit need to be a solid unit to take care of the household.
Right.
There are certain things that we as men can't do while we're at work all day. We need a woman who can come and take care of our children when we're unable to nurture and be there for them. I feel that the man should lead. Leadership is about taking the first hit. You should always protect your family. And as a man, You may come up with ideas that may fail or may not work out, or your wife might give a suggestion and you go along with it and it ends up going really bad, right? But as a lead, you take accountability. You're not going to blame your wife. You're not going to blame your family. You're going to take accountability not only for the mistake or the error, but you're going to also take accountability for fixing it and getting your family out of the mess or whatever mess you're in. Lead is not just about, oh, I'm going to be in charge, but I'm also going to take the brunt of when things go wrong. I'm going to figure it out and get us back on track. That's your responsibility as a man.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like leadership as well from the man is like a coming together thing with your spouse, because maybe you can get some advice from your partner, like your wife, in order to make that decision to lead. So even though you are the leader, coming together and discussing things and making sure that's what's good for the family, you know,
yeah,
that can make the leadership goes well.
That is true. As men, sometimes we use aggression or physical strength or anger to deal with getting our way. When you speak to a woman who may not be as strong, sometimes may not be as strong physically, aspect to go into fist fight, there's different strength that you can have. The strength from mental strength, from having to find a way to conquer someone without using your fists when you're not strong enough to do that, or even mental strength that they have from being able to commit to carrying a child for 9 months. That type of mental strength to commit to something that is basically delayed gratification, to wait for that moment, even though you're going through so much, you're in that for a reward. I think us as men can also benefit from that wisdom. How do we make a plan now and go through the tough emotions of it not going away for at least 9 months before we give up on something and concede that it's not going to work? Another thing that we can learn from our women is how to engage with our children. Sometimes it's about discipline and firmness, but sometimes it's about nurturing as a man too. And when I say nurturing, I mean we need to support our children, encourage our children, and allow them to make mistakes. You want to teach them that the world's not always fair, but you have to also allow room for growth.
Yep.
We have a blended family. My daughter is 14 years old, turning 15.
Yep. And my kids are 12 and 5.
In some communities, I guess they call it the red pill. They believe, oh, a woman above a certain age or have kids, then, you know, the values is very low. And, you know what I mean? And there are a lot of people who believe that if you have a child, who's going to want to talk to you? And a lot of people feel insecure about that, about finding a new partner while they have children. As a man, you have to find someone who is worth taking as a package deal. You don't want someone who feels that your job is to take care of their children. You want someone who understands that that's their responsibility and the child's father's responsibility, and you're also going to contribute to the success. So in this situation for me, my wife and her previous partner take care of their children very well. But I also, being around them, I contribute whatever I can to the betterment of their children as my stepchildren, because I understand as a stepchild myself how it feels to be in a blended family and not be acknowledged or treated fairly in the household. As a child, you don't understand all those dynamics. You just understand, is this fair or not fair based on their perspective? So I had to adjust my style of parenting to accommodate my stepchildren.
Yeah.
You know, I just do what I would do for anybody who I cared about. You just want to do good, positive things that empower them. So whether that is teaching your stepson how to ride a bike, or that's teaching your stepdaughter how to read and write, there's nothing wrong with empowering them, because at the end of the day, we all as parents need to make sure children are capable of being independent when they become older.
Exactly. Yeah.
The world's getting tougher. The world that we grew up in doesn't exist anymore. So we need to equip them even better. I tell my daughter, listen, I'm not here to live your life for you, but I'm just trying to get you to a stage where when you're able to make your own decisions, you can. Because certain people, they can't make decisions because they made too many mistakes and no one was there to guide or stop them. So I just put her in the best position to make those decisions. What's your opinion on blended families?
I think you covered everything, but my opinion on blended family is being able to work with each other, because we're both coming from two different backgrounds, and coming together, you know, with different backgrounds can be challenging at some time.
Yeah, more strict.
Yeah, sometimes.
Formatted.
Yeah. I feel like if we have this family concept where we can talk about things, getting together and knowing each other, that's a good thing. Even though we're talking about it now, we're actually working on it.
Yeah, it's a growing process.
It's a growing process.
And kids are growing. They're changing.
Yeah.
But I think as stepmom and stepparents or husband and wife, the main thing is you have to work together. You cannot be separated. And if possible, even with the exes, try not to be separated, because the kids see that and they just start to use that against you. They'll jump from one to the next to try and get around things. So you have to work together. Just like how it takes a community, they say it takes a village to raise a child. You really need to come together, because it serves nobody's benefit to have children who fail. It doesn't, because you're going to end up having to take care of them in your old age. Instead of them being independent, they're going to be sitting down wasting time in your house. But you need to empower them to get out there and have a future, because what's the point of us working so hard with nobody to pass it to? That is, to me, pointless.
Sure. Working together, that will make it better.
What makes a good stepdad or stepmom?
I'm going to speak for myself, because I'm a mom.
Okay.
I don't know. I think you have to take some values just from being a mom. I'm not used to being a stepmom, but I feel like just showing nurture. I'm a nurturing person. I'm also a caring and kind person. Still in the learning stage. This is my first time being a step parent or stepmom specifically.
For me, I think what makes a good stepdad, I think you have to be able to make the tough decisions. You can't come in with a head that believes that I'm going to make your partner's child like you. You're just trying to win their approval. At the end of the day, you'll never be their father. They have a father, and you should never try to replace that. You should always know where you stand with regards to that. You can't replace something. Even if they have a bad father or a good father, that doesn't matter. You can never be their father. You can be maybe a father figure, but the most important thing is not even that. The most important thing is to be a good example. You need to be a good example, and you need to help them to make good decisions, and you have to give good advice, because at the end of the day, being liked by children is not going to make you feel better if they go out there and make poor decisions to ruin their life. So my stance is you need to have good character, tell them the truth, and help them to make good decisions, even if they hate your advice. Because one thing for sure, when they get older, you hear all the time, nobody ever told me this, or no one ever stopped me from this, or why didn't anyone? And they start to blame everybody in their lives for their poor decisions. So I make sure, even if the children hate me, I tell them advice that suits them, advice that they can respect, because I don't want them coming back to say, nobody ever told me. And I wish, even from my own situation, that people had told me a lot more when I was younger so that I could have avoided some of the mistakes.
Yeah, that's true. But also keep in mind that we have to learn from our mistakes too, right? Learning from our mistakes can also be a way for us to make our lives better. We have to go through certain things too, right? No?
Yeah, of course. You have to learn from your mistake. You have to evolve. If you don't evolve, you don't learn, you're going to be stuck in a cycle. You know what they say, insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. You have to be able to stop yourself. And that's part of being a leader too. Stop yourself and know when to change, when to give up, when to move on.
Yeah.
Because the stakes are high.
Yeah.
Anything could ruin your relationship nowadays. It could be financial, it could be emotional, it could be someone passes that's dear to you, or, you know, a child passes away. These are real things that are happening. It's happening all over. It's happened to people. They don't speak about it, but they have to deal with it. These are really, really tough situations that I could speak on right now, but I'm not going to get that deep. But we just have to understand that relationships have a lot of challenges. So don't create more challenges for yourself by not being loyal, not being focused, not knowing what you want. You have to be a good team, because you're going to have to face things regardless. So it's better to face it together as a strong unit than be all over the place, unorganized. You can't lie down at night, close your eyes next to your partner. You don't trust them. You're not loyal to them, and you can't work with them. That doesn't make any sense. You need to really, really say to yourself, what do you want? And make a decision. Just make a decision and stick to it. If you don't want to be there, move on. If you want to stay there, then better yourself and make it work.
Right.
These are just a few of the topics. We can go on and on and on. And I think we got in pretty well for this discussion of Black love. With everything being said, Black love, are we winning? You still believe in Black love? Or is it overhyped?
Yeah, I believe in Black love. And I think we're winning. And Black love will win and continue to win.
I definitely believe in Black love, because that's what the Black community needs. We need to communicate with each other. We need to be kind with each other. A lot of people don't listen to us. A lot of people talk at us, and not talk to us. So they're making a lot of assumptions, coming up with a lot of stereotypes. Everybody is telling you about being Black, and you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm Black, and you're trying to tell me about being Black. The few things that you do talk about, then they pretend like, oh, you know, this is not happening. We're delusional. So when you speak to another Black person, show them Black love, because you're saying, hey, we're both in this. We're not crazy here, and we're going to get through these issues together, whether it's relationship issues or community issues. We're going to love each other. We're going to work together. We're going to get through these issues together, because unlike other people who are not going through it, there's no sense of urgency to fix the problem. And on top of that, if someone doesn't see your experience, and this is the importance of Black love, if they don't acknowledge or see the things you're going through, that means that there's no hope for you fixing that, because to them, it's not even real. We're dealing with real issues in Black love. We're trying to overcome real barriers, and you need to always align with someone who believes in you, believes in what you're saying to be true, and is willing to do the work that's necessary to make things better.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
There will definitely be more topics to come. You can definitely reach out to me at MrNathanPowell@gmail.com. I'll just use Gmail because it's easy to remember. You can reach out to us. And if you'd like to talk about a topic, if you're from the Black community, if you're a supporter of the Black community, or if you just have knowledge to share with the Black community and how we relate to your culture, we have a lot in common. Black people are everywhere in different cultures, right? Different countries. I speak on Blackness because I'm Black, right? I don't want to be out of place and speak about things I don't know, but I definitely welcome other people who have other things to say, from other communities who want to share their own experiences to speak on what they know. So thank you very much for all being here and supporting the Mr. Nathan Powell podcast. Take care.